Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome into Brewcast from Mason Brew Podcast on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am Luke Giardi, joined as always by Anthony Broom and Steven Ossentoski here with you on Monday night, September 27th, as we head into Tuesday, September 28th, coming to you live on the Mason Brew YouTube page. Appreciate everyone who is watching live right now. Already got the comment section fired up and ready to go. We'll be talking quite a bit about the Rutgers game. Obviously, look ahead to Wisconsin here this week on the road to Madison. But before we do, guys, Anthony, Steven, how are we doing here tonight?
I burned the candle at both ends this weekend. I was not in Ann Arbor Saturday. I was actually in Louisville for the last 4 days. I had a prior engagement. Obviously, I got a little bit of sun. You can see the raccoon eyes thing going on here.
Yeah, look at you.
Yeah, no, it's good to get some extra vitamin D in late September. Us Michiganders aren't always used to that. So,
right.
Good time, though. Obviously, watched Saturday's game. It was just a remote broadcast for me. I think I've digested this. It wasn't the craziest thing to happen with a state of Michigan football team this weekend, but nonetheless, Michigan moves to 4-0, and there are still things I don't know about this team that it's crazy we don't know about a month into the year. So,
yeah, my first reaction after the game was the Charlie Kelly scene from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the gas episode where he jumps out the back of the van. He's like, wild card, and then he just jumps out, cuts the brakes. That feels like Michigan. That's exactly where I'm at, where it's just like, you ask me who this team is, and it's hard to say. But it was funny because I was on the drive home from visiting some family and listened to the first half on the radio, most of the first half. I was like, this sounds pretty great. This is pretty good. And then I start watching the second half. I'm like, did I listen to a different game? What was going on? It was pretty stark difference. But yeah, man, there's lots of questions that are now becoming concerns. I think we're learning that some of these things, we're seeing more data come in where it's like, okay, I think there are some fair concerns here. Judging by the comments alone here, I think people are really, really looking to talk about it. I think there's lots to discuss.
Yeah, there certainly is here. And obviously, I mean, the game started like pretty much every other game has started for Michigan as they methodically.
They looked exactly what a team favored by 20 and a half points should look like in a half of football.
Yeah, absolutely. That first drive was exactly what we've seen all year from them. Mixing of runs, obviously, a few passes here and there, but running the football, ending up with a touchdown on that first drive. And the defense was really good in that first half, and Michigan was able to move the ball quite a bit. I think there, obviously, people are talking a lot about the passing game, particularly the play of Cade McNamara and, you know, how he looked in the second half. But there was that.
Do we start with Antoine, who's taking an issue with us on a number of fronts here?
We should nip these in the bud here.
So,
yeah.
And I think so. Basically, there's a lot of thank you, Antoine, for watching. Those of you who are listening after the fact, we stream these podcasts every Monday night here on the YouTube channel. Antoine was pretty vocal either last week or the week before about Michigan needs to pass the ball more and get those reps. And we're hearing about it from them after how things went on Saturday. And I want to just address it by, in a game like the Washington game, like I get these types of questions for Western Michigan and for Northern Illinois. Like those are teams that you should never lose, not only not lose to, but you should always beat them pretty handily. So to put things on film and get reps, I get the desire for that. When I look at how Cade McNamara played on Saturday, and this is how, I guess this is how we spin into the first part of this show. I just felt like there were a lot of just missed opportunities on the field. I didn't think the play calling was terrible. I've softened my stance from that since I did the post game podcast, but you know, there were at least three or four throws that I can remember off the top of my head where you just have to hit those. And 4 weeks into a year, into a season, you had a full training camp, you had spring football. This is your third year on campus. You have to hit those throws. And you know, this is what I said last year. Like I've said this during our basketball podcast, and Luke can attest to this. Things that happen in a vacuum of one game or one half of football, I can kind of write off. But when you start to see things look like they're trends, like I feel like Cade has left a few throws on the field in each of these games. Maybe not so much Western Michigan, but Cade McNamara just has to play better. I think it just boils down to that. And I think he's capable of that. I'm not sure what happened. Like I love the quick passing game. I know, again, people have always been under the impression that the speed and space means they're going to go 4 or 5 wide, run the air raid and chuck the ball over the field in what they want to be with the RPOs, the quick reads and getting the ball out quick. The first half to me was as good as I've seen it look in terms of how he's played and how the team played and executed. But the second half is just like, I don't think he did them any favors. I think Michigan, I said this the other day in the podcast, my concern with them is what happens when someone punches back and you can't just push someone around and they're so confident, just short. I don't know if to call it hubris or not. I don't think that's fair to them, but they're so confident in what they are that when they get thrown off schedule, I think there's a little bit of a deer in the headlights look. And I feel like I saw that on Saturday. You come out and you go 3 and out on your first 4 drives. And it was just, I don't know if that's a sign of things to come. I don't know if that's the vacuum of 30 minutes of football. But the only way you get answers to that, you don't get answers to that by spewing hot takes and shaking your fist to the sky and saying, oh, this is the same old Wolverines. We're not going to know what the hell Saturday second half was until we see what happens this Saturday. And I'm sorry if that's not sexy to talk about, if that's not the answers you're looking for, but that's just the fact of the matter here. I have no idea what to make of that.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to kind of what I was saying here was that I thought Cade for the most of the first half played really good. I thought he made a lot of really good throws, and the roughing the passer where he took the hit on the chin, it was a really good throw to Cornelius Johnson and a huge gain on the play. And Cade was not the same after that hit. I don't know what it was, but he missed a ton of easy throws. Obviously, everyone remembers the one in the end zone right before halftime. But after that hit, he just wasn't the same. Steven, I know you went through the film. I'm sure you can attest to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's more of a coincidence. Now, I don't think the hit was as bad as it initially looked. It seemed like it was more hands to the face than a pure helmet. I don't think he probably should have gotten ejected for that hit. But there is something to say of yeah, that could have affected him just getting the yips, not being comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a fair question. I think it's probably more of a coincidence. I think he had one bad pass at the end of the half. To be fair, Shoemaker did stumble kind of on that route. So he probably should have been a little closer to that, where that throw ended up. But he still could have lofted it a bit more. I'll agree, that's a total miss on Cade McNamara's part. On a couple of the throws, the one to Sainer was still in the second half. It was on a slant, kind of looked similar to some of the more successful passes in the first half. It was a little bit low, probably catchable, but still a tough pass. There was one out to AJ Henning that I think Henning gained a little bit too much depth after the cut on the out route. And that's kind of a tough route. He was relatively well covered. A throw that's behind AJ Henning could potentially be in a position to get pick sixth there. So I mention these things because, yeah, they were not, I mean, it's not great. He had a bad half. There's no other way to describe that, but it's not like he threw like two picks and put the game really in danger. I mean, obviously you want to be picking up more than one first down in a full half of football, but I think people who are already calling for JJ McCarthy are not seeing the downside of having a less safe option. JJ McCarthy for sure will have more flashes. I think you'll see a better arm talent, but knock on wood, Cade McNamara hasn't turned the ball over. There's value in having a safe option at quarterback, even if he is a little bit limited physically. I don't think the staff did any favors by, I remember the first half, they had like a bunch, like four wide receivers wide in a bunch and just a simple man-to-man slant route to Cornelius Johnson. Why not scheme something similar to that? I don't think they were giving enough schematic wins or easy completions like a screen pass. They always kept bringing a safety down to bring extra men in the box to constantly stuff the run game. Outside run game, we only saw one attempted run outside the tackles that went for 9 yards, right? Yeah. And that changes your offensive complexion. So did Cade McNamara perform really poorly in the second half? Absolutely. Did the offense set up the quarterback well to execute in a more diverse offense that would provide better opportunities for the offense overall? I think the staff could have done better. So I'm kind of where Anthony's at. Go ahead.
This is where, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is where the talk over the first few weeks, we're not going to get high on our own stuff. We're not going to fall in love with the things we're doing. Doesn't it kind of feel like they fell in love with the things that they've been doing? And it obviously it didn't equate to what it was similar to the Michigan State game last year. Obviously Michigan won, so it's not similar in that regard, but you just kept running up the middle and running up the middle because you felt like eventually you could and something would break, because I think they were kind of confident in their own stuff. And when you run the ball for 340 yards or whatever it was in the first 3 weeks of the year in each game, I get it. You know, Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins are your two best players on offense. But I do, like I said, it's tough for me to, I just think it's kind of a team. So many things kind of just didn't go right in that second half that, you know, if we're saying that Cade McNamara was kind of thrown off schedule by taking the hit, let's just say that he was a little thrown off. If he's not injured, your job as an offensive coordinator is to get that guy back into rhythm, right? Mm. And it just didn't seem like there was much of an effort to do that.
To your point, there is, like, you know, people are talking like Michigan only. I have my own problems with the play calling, especially in that second half. But I mean, a lot of people are acting like they literally only ran it every play. They had one of the three and outs where Cade McNamara was 0 for 3. You know, they ran three straight pass plays. They threw it on first down more than a few times. And this is when Michigan had the lead. It's not like they were ever trailing from behind. I feel like that's getting lost in a lot of this too, right? Is that Michigan won this football game.
Yeah.
And people are really talking like they lost this football game.
Yeah.
It was never really in danger. I mean, Michigan was never in danger of trailing in this football game, really, you know? So I don't know.
Not in danger of trailing, but like I said, when you let Rutgers, and I said this last week, I said it in the post game, Rutgers is not, this is not Chris Ash's Rutgers anymore. Right. They came to Ann Arbor on Saturday, Vegas be damned, looking to compete and win a football game. So, like I said, it to let a team like that hang around, that's dangerous. And something that also, I have no idea what's going on. Sorry, an ad popped up. God, I'm so flustered today.
Do you want a credit card, Anthony?
I have one. I have one. Trust me. It's no. Where I was going with that is that there's still so many unknowns, and that even it's funny. Michigan actually improved in the eyes of the computers this weekend because a lot of them had Rutgers as a top 40 opponent. So that goes down as a quality win for them. And I still think at the end of the day, I mean, you got out of there with a win, but what you see is, you know, even teams that are good have a couple game, one or two games each season where something like this happens. And I think what Michigan fans are bringing into this, and they're right to do so, is that typically games like this have been kind of teasers for what's to come.
Right at the wall.
And I think you're totally justified in feeling that way. A lot of the same people are in place in terms of that power structure. But, you know, to me, there's still just so much with them that's different. And I think they're better in a lot of areas, namely the offensive line, namely the backs. I do think they're probably as poised at the quarterback position as they've been since, you know, Wilton was healthy or since Shea was playing well that first year. It's just a matter of you have to execute, and they didn't do that on Saturday. I don't know. Michigan hasn't won at Wisconsin since 2001. And if it's going to happen, it kind of has to happen this year. Cause if it doesn't happen against this Wisconsin team, then I think we're kind of right back in the muck of where, like, this has always been circled as the where are you at type of game. And even though, you know, with Wisconsin, and I know we're talking Rutgers here, but I feel like I can't make any definitive type of prediction until we see what shows up on the field on Saturday, because this at times has been a completely different football game or football team away from Ann Arbor. So that's why I'm not, people hate me for taking the wait and see approach and being patient and not going fire and brimstone. There are just so many things I need to see still. And I'm a little more, again, a couple weeks ago, we had the conversation about questions, not concerns. Some of them are getting cranked in the concern pile. Yeah. So that's what happens when more data comes in.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steven.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think when you look at just snap to snap, and you don't have to wait through commercials and wait for through the defense and things like that, you look at the offense and they're like relatively close. There's a pass to Eric Hall that was, you know, just off the fingertips. I mentioned the Sainristil pass that was just a bit low. There are things that are close where it's not like, man, we are like just lost out there, right? It's missed execution that like you can see. But when the defense is giving up a 70-yard, like 12-play drive that's like a goal line stand for a field goal, that happened twice, another missed field goal from Rutgers. When you add in that context of like, look how easy Rutgers is making it look, right? It felt like any read option for Noah Vedral is getting 7 yards, and you're just like, why can't we do this, right? It seemed like Rutgers had a really easy time understanding what Michigan's defense is going to give you, which apparently is an 8 yard out or an 8 yard hitch every single time. And good luck stopping Rutgers when they have three downs at second and two or shorter. So it's things like that where when you add that on, you're mad about that. And then when you get to the offense and they're struggling to execute, you're more mad about the offense because of how easy the opposition makes things look. So I think the final thing I'll mention about like the offense execution, I just am really sad that true play action pass isn't a thing. Think of how powerful like a hard boot action off of a fake to Blake Corum would do. And it's just not something that happens often. It's just not a part of the playbook. It's not something that Gattis really believes in. It's more RPO looks that we're, again, consistently questioning, is this actually an RPO read? Does the quarterback actually have an option in this, or are they just trying to add that for an extra element that they hope the defense will honor, right, the QB keep in those scenarios? So all of this is just to say it's a reversion back to what a lot of fans thought this team was going to be, that temporarily for three games, Michigan seemingly was on a different path. And now this one half leaves that sour taste where everyone is just staring into the abyss, wondering what's happening to their football team that they thought had bucked a lot of trends that they've been seeing for the past, you could say, 5 years or so. So yeah, man, again, I'm always one kind of with Anthony where the more data, the better, because that first half looked like exactly what you want Michigan offense to look like against that team. And Rutgers, as funny as it is to make fun of them, I think in terms of talent level to coaching, they're about as close to their ceiling as any other team in the Big Ten right now. I think they're probably one of the top three best coached staffs in college football right now. I think Schiano is phenomenal. They have a great offensive coordinator. They get the most out of their team. They don't make a whole lot of mistakes. And I think the only thing that you could really point to Rutgers and say, what the hell were they doing, was some of their short yardage fourth down calls. And the fourth and 10 at the end of the first half. I don't know what Schiano was thinking there. But from a play-to-play standpoint, outside of those kind of edge cases, Rutgers is a really well-coached team. And I think they're close to their ceiling, which is a probably 6 or 7 win, possibly more if they can find some luck here. But I don't think that was a bad Rutgers team. And yeah, there's a lot to learn more. I'm more just sad that play action pass outside run diversity. It feels like the team is fine with a 2-possession lead. And it just makes me scared whenever that happens. We're just like, we got to clench and hold on.
conservative football can get you to 8 or 9 wins a year. It's not going to get you more than that. No. And that's what we saw in the second half.
Someone pointed it out, I think, on Twitter. Felt very Army 2019. I mean, you just kept getting runs in between the guards. Just nothing to the outside. No creativity like we saw. Steven, to your point, man, you know, I've been very vocal about trying to get some more play action passes, particularly on first downs in high leverage situations. I would love to see that. Just I mean, at this point, like, we are 4 games in. I feel like the offense is what the offense is and what it's going to be, you know, moving forward. I saw people mentioning things like they're saving stuff for Wisconsin. I'm like, saving what? Like, what do they have that they're saving? Do you think Wisconsin can only go and look at the Rutgers game? Like, that they're not going to see the end of rounds and reverses and the off-tackle stuff that they did against Northern Illinois and Washington and Western Michigan? They're not saving anything. They weren't saving anything. So that's why I was a little disappointed with the play call in the second half. But to your point, I think they were just kind of leaning on the defense, hanging on to the 2-possession lead. I will say, though, very impressed with the defense, given the bad situation that they were put in. You lose Josh Ross. That's already a bad thing. And you get no rest, 3 straight 3-and-outs to begin the second half. They were put in some really tough positions, and they bent, but they didn't break. And I got to give them a lot of credit playing a lot of young guys out there.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, shout out to David Ojabo and Junior Colson for sealing off that game, because the offense couldn't do it. And Jake Moody's been pretty good this year, but he couldn't do it either. They had a chance to go up by 2 scores, and maybe that's when you would have felt good about it. But they sweated this one out till the end, and someone had to make a play. And similar to that Army game, someone did. So shout out to those guys, first of all. You know, it reminded me again a little bit of the earlier portions of last year, and that your offense was so inept in that second half of the game. The defense was on the field the whole second half, so those guys are gassed. The fact that anyone was able to make a play that late, I think that's they showed me a lot with their resolve on Saturday. That was to me. Again, I know some of there's stuff that they still need to work on. And I think we kind of came into the season assuming that was going to be the case with this defense. They're still, to me, talent deficient in a couple of critical areas, namely at cornerback. I'm not crazy about what they have at safety. You know, defensive line, those guys have potential, but have been, I thought they got pushed around a little bit. It's, like I said, it's just one of those games that I think what it what it's done is, and I'll call them the well, I won't call them names. The portion of the fan base that looked at those first three games and thought that this was the type of game that would happen because of those other how those other three games went, and they didn't work on certain things. They didn't pass the ball enough. This was the type of game those people expected to see. I still don't know if that's this is good. I mean, if this is the norm, then we're right back to this potentially being a 7 or 8 win football team. But I think there's just more there to I just what we've seen so far. I tend to believe, like, we all know they can play much better football than this. It's not a they weren't in a dogfight with Rutgers because Rutgers was even in talent. Rutgers was well coached. They didn't make mistakes. They didn't back down from a fight. And I still think there are probably guys on that team who, despite how last year went, probably aren't used to that when seeing the team with the, you know, the Rutgers name across their chest doing. So
I think it's also worth pointing out that it wasn't necessarily a dogfight all game. You know, it was a 17 at halftime.
No, and this is where I think I hope this can be beneficial for them in that they learned they were finally in things finally kind of didn't go well for them. And somehow, some way, they were able to do enough to pull through that. I think based on what I've seen from the mental makeup of a lot of those guys, like I can't sit here and say it's not going to be a group that doesn't let it happen again. But I do think it's a very self-aware group that knows it can't let that happen again. So I know people are probably afraid and think that going into Wisconsin Saturday is a death march. I'm extremely excited to see how they come out and play, because for me, and again, people might think this is boring or vanilla analysis. To me, the only thing that matters is what happens next. So,
Yeah. I mean, you either learn from it or it was a crappy game, right? I think anyone will say that you're going to have a game like that in the future, whether it's against a good opponent or not. Those games, there's a lot to learn from a game like that, not only from the X's and O's, but from the mental standpoint of your team, having that mental resolve. If you go through the regular season like a Clemson and you don't play anybody all year, by the time you run into some opponent that'll, you know, kick you in the teeth, you won't know how your team's going to respond to that. And you won't know where the gaps are within your team to adjust to those scenarios. So for better or for worse, at least we can say we had that going into other games. And I'm thinking from the defensive standpoint, it's got to be really, really damn hard to go out and play with a lot of fire, a lot of energy, drive after drive when the offense is struggling that much, right? To only see your offense get one first down, that's pretty momentum sucking from your team overall. So to go out and continue to fight when Rutgers, you know, made it around the red zone a couple of times, to still be strong and not give up a touchdown in those scenarios, I mean, it's huge, right? That was the difference between Michigan winning the game or not. So to sure, there was some bend there, but to not break and to continue to ensure that Rutgers stayed out of the end zone, that's what won Michigan the game. So I think that's something, if you're looking for a positive to take from the game, I do think Vincent Gray is playing much better than last year. I think it's nice that we have a guy like Junior Colson step up. Josh Ross had a questionable 2020. It showed how valuable he is this year. I think I'm still pretty down on the defensive line, especially on the interior this year. But when they had to, they made a play. And I think going into this season, I said the offense needs to carry this defense. And the exact opposite happened in the second half of the last game. So defense already ahead of where I would expect them to be. I still think it's a top 30 defense. I think they're number 4 right now in scoring defense overall. I think that's a little inflated. I think teams will start to be able to put some points together. But it feels like now they have potential to be around 20th or so, rather than where I was thinking hovering around 30th as the ceiling. I think they can be a little bit better than that. But I mean, again, I think the mental aspect, the ability to continue to perform despite things going completely wrong on the other side of the ball, I think that gives some weight to those kind of like culture changes overall, and especially in the defensive room after what we saw in 2020.
Okay, I want to bring up this comment here. It's from Marky Mac. He said, Wisconsin is going to curb stomp Michigan. And my question is, like, I'm not sure who's going to win this game, but like, is Wisconsin's offense capable of curb stomping anybody?
Not no, really.
But, like, it could be like it could be like a 12-6 win for Wisconsin. I feel like I don't think that Graham Mertz and company is going to curb stomp anyone this year. That's for sure.
I mean, if you believe that this Michigan defense is the 2020 defense in sheep's clothing, then yeah. I guess maybe there's a chance that Graham Mertz can go all Rocky Lombardi on them. And I won't completely rule that out. I mean, I've seen everything at this point, so I'll never rule and anything.
I do want to apologize. It appears Marky Mac is just kind of a troll that's in here. He says Michigan hasn't pressured any QB all year. So,
okay. Well,
yeah.
Marky.
Yeah. I think he's just a troll coming in trying to stir things up.
I'm going
to
go ahead and put
we're not going to take that guy seriously anymore.
We're going to go ahead and put Marky Mac in timeout. So, something else I want to talk about, because I know the conversation will be, again, centered on JJ versus Cade. If you think that Michigan doesn't have confidence in the third-year quarterback they already have, what do you think the play calling will look like when they put a true freshman out there?
And do you really want Camp Randall to be this guy's first start?
No, I don't. And like I said, if he's the best guy, he should play, period. And I have confidence that because it's always been this way, because they don't give a damn about red shirts. They don't care about, if you want to say that Brandon Peters wasn't made ready soon enough in 2017, I'll listen to that argument because I agree with it. John O'Korn was that bad when he was on the field. But like I said, JJ will play when he's ready. And eventually there will come a time where he is too good to keep off the field. And we've already seen a little bit of that raw talent, but in the two game, I mean, outside of one throw that he's made in two games of garbage time, he's looked like a freshman. So if it gets to a point like, so when we did the silly little video game stream during the summer, and if you're in a scenario where Michigan is 4-0, but if they were 4-0, they lose the next two games, you lose at Wisconsin, you lose at Nebraska, your season's probably over anyways. If it gets to that point where then it's, and for that to happen, I think Cade really has to fall apart, which I'm not ruling out. Again, I've seen everything. But until it's apparent that either or here, that Cade can't hold on to the job or that JJ has supplanted him, I'm not rushing that. I know the most popular guy on any team is going to be the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Especially at Michigan where, they've been chasing that elusive guy, so to speak, since a pro style guy since Chad Henne, and they haven't had a star there since Denard Robinson. So outside of a few games of Devin Gardner, if JJ comes in and struggles, then it becomes, everyone wants to see what Dan Villari can do. Well, let's see what this Alan Bowman guy can do. He's played games in the Big 12. He has experience. So it's always going to be that guy on the next rung. And plus, if JJ comes in now and he's not ready to go, and again, I know these are ifs, but Cade is playing, Cade is starting, so we're to assume that's how the depth chart looks. If JJ comes in now and doesn't play well, then everything gets thrown into nuclear overload in that JJ McCarthy's a bust and Jim Harbaugh can't evaluate a quarterback. And that's the type of stuff they don't need right now. I think they can deal with the controversy of Cade being their starting quarterback. I don't think they can survive the discourse around if JJ McCarthy comes in before he's ready to. So
yeah.
Lest we forget, this staff has to win football games this year or else they won't be here.
Yep. Right.
Period.
JJ was ready. I have no doubt in my mind that he'd be playing.
And here's the thing. Last week, Notre Dame beat Wisconsin 41-13. More than half of Notre Dame's points did not come from their offense. Okay. That's their defense that scored two pick sixes and they had a kick return for a touchdown. So what do you do against a defense for Wisconsin that is top 10 in the nation, if not better than that? You don't turn the damn ball over because they're struggling on offense, right? It's the same sort of situation that you had against Washington. Wisconsin has even a better defense. The worst thing you can do to a team with a struggling offense, with a quarterback like Mertz who threw four interceptions, the worst thing you can do is give them the ball in good field position, and that's usually what turnovers do. So I think you should go with the quarterback that has yet to turn the ball over. I'm knocking on all the wood in my room right now, but like, I feel like it's a no-brainer to go with the guy that you've had all camp in who has yet to do that. And, you know,
and he's had really one bad half.
Yeah.
Like, so we can't just write off the season because of that. Like, I know he didn't throw much in the Washington game, but we've been over why that was the case, but
I think it was Steven that made this point. I forget. Maybe it was Steven. Maybe I heard it on the radio. The fact that I'm even linking the two of those. Hey, Steven, that's points for you regardless, buddy. When you don't throw the ball a ton, your margin of error is just so much, so much less. And you have to, like, if you throw the ball 16 times, like he did on Saturday, and you miss three throws, four throws, whatever it is, extrapolate that over the course of a game. And those are missed opportunities. And they just have to be sharper there. And I'll say this to his credit. And again, I know after the Washington game, they played a team full of construction cones in Northern Illinois. But it just seemed like after he had a week to watch film, and again, I know people will cringe that it seems like I'm a Cade Truth or whatever. I don't care what you call me at this point. I'm Teflon. Bounces right off of me. It just seemed like the ball was coming out quicker after he had a week to kind of see what was in the ball. I thought the ball came out quick on Saturday. It just a couple key moments, it came out inaccurately and not where it's supposed to be. That's a footwork thing. That's a mechanics thing. That's, you know, it's just not making a play. And they left some potential on the field Saturday. It would be disingenuous of me to say I know that means they're screwed moving forward. I have a gut feeling what it might mean moving forward. But until they play these games, Wisconsin, and even it looks like we were laughing at Nebraska a month ago after they lost to Illinois. That's a team that's scrapping and playing hard right now. That's going to be a fight too. So these next 2 weeks, we've been waiting a month for answers. You're going to know what this team is in the next 2 weeks, period.
Yeah. If there's going to be a time for a QB controversy, it's going to be after this game, right? Like we're going to have an answer to whether or not McNamara is going to be able to step up to the plate here. Cause I think Rutgers showed that there's adjustments that need to be made in terms of the overall balance of the pass game. It's Wisconsin is too good on the defensive line to really exploit through the run game. And now that Michigan has kind of been proven that, against Rutgers, we're going to have to schematically win through the air a bit more here. It's not like we'll be going into this game with that being the first time, right? We saw it with Rutgers and now it's time. Now it's time. And I agree. It's not the time at Camp Randall to start a true freshman or, a young quarterback like that. You need to run with what you have right now, and you're going to learn whether or not adjustments need to be made. And after this game is when I think that'll happen. So, I don't know, man. I thought the line was fair to be in favor of Wisconsin. When's the last time Michigan has really proven themselves on the road? I had it kind of as a toss-up. If you wanted to add in the weird voodoo of Michigan's last, 15 years on the road and give a couple extra points additionally on top of the home field advantage towards Wisconsin, I wouldn't disagree with you. And I sent out a tweet that, Wisconsin is, 1-2 right now? And those two losses are to Penn State and Notre Dame. In games, Notre Dame game was close before it fell off the rails at the end of that fourth quarter. But it'll be probably one of the best 1-3 teams that I've seen in a long time if Michigan pulls out a victory there. So it's a team that could rattle off 8 victories after this Michigan game if it goes the Wolverines' way. So people will say it's not a good team. There's a reason they're still, I think, number 29 or whatever when you look at the AP poll in terms of votes for Wisconsin right now, and I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what the game plan is, right? Like, are they going to just throw the chair at the wall and keep running that football? Or are they going to mix in some stuff early, man? That's going to be, we're going to know the tone early in that game, I think.
Yeah.
Well, here's where, and I feel like I've been picking on Antoine, but this is where a comment, I totally agree with him. He says, I'm telling you right now, Wisconsin will stack the line and Gattis is going to have to call a balanced game. And not only that,
I agree with that.
Quick throws, when they present themselves, you have to hit them.
Yep.
Especially if you're only going to throw the ball 15 or 16 times. So I'm totally with you. I'm not here to dispel anything we saw on Saturday as not a big deal. It's just, you know, in the vacuum of one football game, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe it's naive of me at this point. I don't know. But I'm still kind of holding out hope that this can be a pretty balanced offensive attack, because I think when it's worked, we saw. I mean, the first half was quick passes. I think, you know, we're starting to see the wide receivers kind of look comfortable without Ronnie Bell out there. But got to put those guys in positions to succeed, and guys have to execute. So if one of those things is off, you're going to be in for a long day. If both of those things are off, you're going to be fighting for your lives at the end of a football game like they were on Saturday. It's simple as that to me.
Yep.
Yep. So we'll see what happens. Going to be a fun one on Saturday. I already can't wait to talk about it next week. Anthony, Steven. Steven, I'll start with you, man. Where can we find you on social media? What you got going on here this week?
Yep, got analysis. I'm actually kind of ahead of schedule, so hoping I can get some videos out to Twitter and YouTube in the next coming days here. So if you Google or go on YouTube and just search Maize and Brew, you'll find all the work I do there. So definitely a couple of negative play focused analysis coming from this Rutgers game, and hopefully a little bit more positive beyond that. You can find me on Twitter at Steven Toski. I usually post at least half the plays from those full videos ahead of time. So check that out for the coming days for that. And yeah, quick shout out to Logan Evans, who became an early access member. So if you're interested in seeing analysis before anybody else, I did an exclusive live stream last week where we talked about Rutgers a lot. Lots of cool stuff on the channel coming through that. So go over, head to the channel, press the join button, and it'll have different options for different membership tiers there.
Anthony, where can we find you, man?
You can find me on Twitter at Anthony T. Broom, and get your Maize and Brew podcast wherever you get your podcast: Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher. The website is wherever you're at on social media. Unless you're in some of the dark corners of the internet, we're not there, but the normal places we are. So, thank you for your continued support of I'm so tired. You can hear it. I'm ready for it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
And wherever you do get your podcast, subscribe, rate, leave a review. We really do appreciate that, and appreciate everyone who's here with us every Monday night, 7:30 on the Maize and Brew YouTube live channel. Appreciate all your comments. I promise you, we read all of them. We'd love to get to more, and thank you for helping push the discussion as well. Appreciate all of you. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. So that's going to do it for us here on this week's Brewcast. For Anthony Broom and Steven Ossentoski, I'm Luke Chiarotti, and we'll see you next week.